Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Better Than Bad. As always, I am your host, Jess. I hope you all well. I hope you enjoyed the last episode. Today, I am joined by a very special guest because today I'm joined by Kat. Hello.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I am very well. How are you?
I am very much looking forward to our little chat.
Do you want to tell the people who we're discussing today?
So we are going to be discussing Donna from Neighbours, aka Margot Robbie.
Her most famous role.
Obviously.
Yes, we're going to be talking about Margot Robbie. So for those who don't know, I don't know why you wouldn't. You've been living under a rock if you don't know who Margot Robbie is. But she is an Australian actress and producer. She's known for roles in blockbusters and independent films and in Neighbours, and she's received several accolades, including nominations for 2 Academy Awards, 3 Golden Globes, and 5 BAFTAs. So she's doing pretty well for herself. And she's still quite early on in her career as well. So her top film on IMDb that we're going to be discussing today is The Wolf of Wall Street, which has 8.2 stars on IMDb, and her lowest rated. She actually had 2 that were the exact same rating, and I simply went with the one that was free to watch. And that was ICU, which has 2.6 stars. We're going to start off by talking about ICU. So yeah, like I said, it has 2.6 stars on IMDb. It was released in 2009. It was directed and written by Ash Aron, who also directed Margot Robbie's other lowest rated film, Vigilante. So doing really well. It is an Australian horror slash thriller that follows 3 curious teenagers who are spending a weekend at their dad's new apartment. And while they're spying on their neighbours in the building across, they think they witness a crime and it puts all of their lives in danger. I feel like that's probably the best way to sum up this film, don't you think?
Yes, yeah. That eventually happens
after. Yeah.
Lots of nothing.
Lots of nothing. So had you, I assume you had never seen this film before.
No, I had not. And I mean, I am a, sort of mentioned Donna from Neighbours earlier, I'm a big lover of Neighbours, and I do tend to seek out stuff with those people in, but I hadn't yet ventured to this tier of Neighbours films. So
yeah, this was the first time I'd seen this, and I don't think I'll ever watch it again.
No.
I will avoid it at all costs. You mentioned just now, like, there's a lot of nothing that happens in this film. And that was the main thing I got from it. I was like, that nothing has happened. Nothing happens for about an hour in this film. This film's about an hour and a half long. For an hour of that, nothing happens.
No, it's just montage upon montage upon montage of people working out or like eating their dinner while these kids watch them through their camera and telescope, and it's just, when is something going to happen?
Yeah, and lots of CCTV, overused CCTV footage that doesn't really like accumulate to anything in the end. Just so bizarre. I felt like it was their way of trying to build tension, but it just didn't work at all. I was just like, when is something going to happen? Please, please, can something interesting happen? But and even when things did start to happen, I would argue that it still wasn't very interesting.
No, it just suddenly, out of nowhere, in like the last 10, 15 minutes, it's like, oh yeah, we should probably like have something happen. And then the things that do happen is like, well, where did this come from? Why has that happened? Like, I don't, it twists itself and twists itself. And I'm like, I thought, have I blinked? Have I missed something? Like, I don't understand why this is now ending how it's ending. It was very, yeah, very disjointed, very jumbled.
Yeah. And then I feel like because of that, like the script clearly wasn't great. And I feel like a lot of, because we know that Margot Robbie can act, like that's not a mystery. But in this film, it almost seemed like she couldn't. And I was just, I think sometimes it's like you can't polish a bad script. And they were kind of working with the worst that you could get. Sorry to the person who wrote this, if you're listening.
Yeah.
Don't mean to be
hater. I think, I mean, I am a big advocate of trying to find something good in all films that I watch and review. I don't like pulling a film down. I did a media production degree, so I had to make short films as part of my degree. So I know how hard these things are to do. But I think the big thing for me was I was sat watching it going, I could have done, but in fact, my student films are better than this feature film that got made. Like they only seem to know one camera angle, which is like the mid shot, the mid close up. And there's all that CCTV footage, which is just like shoehorned in. And it just, there wasn't enough variety in shots or location or dialogue, because all the characters seemed to do was have the same conversation. Margot's character was sort of like the princess who wanted just to, you know, have a nice night and wait for their dad to come back. And then there's the brother and the brother's pervy mate. And it was just a constant repeat of the pervy mate trying to sleaze his way onto her and her saying no. And then her brother going, yeah, no. And I feel like she might have hidden this from Mrs. Scorsese when she went up for The Wolf of Wall Street, because this is not something that you want on your showreel.
Like we said, like nothing really happens. I feel like this could have worked better as like a short film. I think a little 10-minute short could have been more effective. But they added all this stuff on top. Like you have the clips of the serial killer just cutting people up. And I mean, I'm not huge on gore. I don't like, I'm not the best, but I can sit through a gory film. I was like, this is so unnecessary. Like, what does this add other than the sort of, you know, the red herring that it may be the guy across the street? But other than that, I was like, this is not helpful. This is not adding to the plot in any way. And then just leading up to that plot twist, and I say plot twist in like quotation marks, of the serial killer being the mum. Spoiler alert for anyone who's planning on watching this film.
Yeah, because it doesn't make any sense. Like she's supposed to be like going away for the weekend to like a spa or something, and then suddenly she turns up and she's there to rescue the kids, and then she gets a weird text on her phone which says I see you, and then we suddenly get all of these shoehorned in flashback sequences being like, surprise, it was her all along.
And it didn't really explain why the dad was trying to get all the kids killed. That was another little added bonus. Like there was just so much going on, yet so little going on. It was like you somehow managed to do all of this and do nothing at the same time. And I kind of felt bad for the team, I guess, as a whole, because I feel like if this had been a short film, it probably could have been more effective and maybe more appreciated. Because it's not necessarily like a bad idea, this idea of having like someone's always watching you, and that's scary for a lot of people, and certainly could have worked had they handled it better. But it just dragged out so much. And one of my favorite things about it was that and when I say favorite, I mean like the thing I laughed at was that when they have the CCTV footage, I felt like they were kind of, the actors were kind of just told, well, we'll just go and do something. And so you see like them walk into a room, and then they come back out like 2 seconds later, and they look at the walls like, where am I going? And it just had no reason for it at all, other than to make it look like they were being watched.
Yeah, and like the difference between the CCTV footage and then the serial killer footage was, again, it was accompanied by screaming rock music, like as metal as you can get, just in case you were dumb enough to think that these kids are themselves recording this. It's like, no, this isn't their camera anymore, this is someone else's. It feels almost like it was a decade too late. It felt like it was trying to get in on like the Saw and Hostel sort of thing with those sequences. But then also in a weird way, it was also ahead of its time, because there's a film that was released in 2022 which stars Michael Monroe, called Watcher. And that is a woman and her husband. They relocate to, I think it's Romania, and they live in a nice posh tower block. And she starts watching the people across the road, and she realizes that someone's watching her back. And it's this whole like gaslighting thing where she thinks that this man is out to get her, and nobody around her believes her. And when I was watching ICU, I was like, I wonder. I doubt very much that the writer of Watcher like checked out ICU, but there is some thematic things. So this is a story that can be told well in the right setting. But I think here I think there was just too much disconnection between everything that they were trying to do.
Yeah, there was a lot. It was just sort of a bit messy as well. Like, I don't know whether it was my stream on Amazon Prime, but the ADR seemed completely out of sync.
It seemed like the whole film had been ADR'd.
Yeah, that's what it's like. When they started talking, I was like, they're in a recording booth right now. They've recorded all their lines over the top. Yeah. Did the mic not pick it up in when they were filming? I was like, I know we need ADR for some things, but it literally felt like the entire film had been dubbed over. And I was like, okay, interesting. And then there were other little bits as well that were just like, I think sometimes, and like we said, like films are really difficult to make. So I never like tearing things apart. But it just, I feel like there was no like attention to detail put over certain things. I think it's funny when you look at this from the perspective of Margot Robbie's entire career, because this is I think this is her second feature film. And to see the extent to which everything's changed for her and how she's gone from doing these sorts of films to doing these big, big blockbusters, but also like how her acting has improved. I think that was... that's the reason I'm glad I've kind of watched this, to see that trajectory.
Yeah, she's very much giving Donna from Neighbours in some respects. Like, Donna was a fashion student and was a bit scatty, and that to some extent is who her character is here, although they're very quick to point out that she knows kickboxing, she knows all this other stuff. So you're kind of sat there as a viewer waiting for that to come into play, and it never really does. But I think even in this, you can tell that there is something about her. As terrible as the script is, and as poorly put together as it is in places, that she does capture the attention when she's on screen. Not necessarily in the same way as she has in the films that followed this, but enough to sort of make you feel sorry for her in a way, like this poor actress that's in this film.
Yeah, she has a certain quality to her, you know, you call it star quality, you can call it, you know, she's got a magnetism when she's on screen, I think. And she's certainly got good instincts as an actor, and I think that's very apparent in pretty much everything I've seen her in. So you do feel sorry for her, because you're sort of seeing her grapple with what is a very one-dimensional character. Despite all those added extras, she's essentially being used as the pretty girl to look at, which although isn't dissimilar from The Wolf of Wall Street, when we get on to talk about that, but there's just a difference in the layering of the character, I guess, whereas with this one it was like they say all this stuff, but it would have been more interesting if at the end, you know, they say that she can do kickboxing or whatever, and it would have been more interesting if at the end she got herself out of the situation.
Yeah.
The opportunity was right there. They just didn't take it. And I think that was what was kind of frustrating from her character, like watching her character. There was just all this potential wasted.
Yeah. I did like the dad's very gruff Australian stereotypical accent, though. He was giving it some Aussie.
It's too much. Like, it was so Australian, so like, and I find it really interesting how different Margot Robbie's accent is now, like how it's dulled down, because when you see her in this, or when she was in like Neighbours or whatever, so Australian. And this was just like, but yeah, the dad, there was one point his hands around it, do I get a kiss? I was like, yeah. Oh wow.
Yeah, it almost felt like it was a non-Australian doing the accent, though. It was so on the nose.
Yeah.
Gruff Aussie. And again, not doing anything for portraying police officers in any sort of trustworthy light, because he his occupation is that he's a detective and he has to go out on a case, and that's why he leaves the kids on their own all night.
His the guy who plays his partner, his detective partner in the film, is actually the director of this as well, I've discovered when I was doing my little IMDb searches this morning to double check I knew everything I was talking about. I was like, oh, he was the guy. So he just popped himself in there for a random random moment. It's just, yeah. It's one of those ones where I was watching, I was like, there's really not much to say about this because literally nothing happens. And I know people listening will probably be like, surely there's like more to it than that. But it is literally just about an hour's worth of CCTV / handheld camera montages. We spend so much time watching this woman watch the TV through through the window. And I also thought, like, the process of paying all of those actors to do those, you know, they had the cheerleaders or the people doing their workout, and I was like, the process of paying all of these people to go onto set for a couple, you know, maybe a day or two to film all that, you've paid all of that just for this, like, to for it not to add anything to the plot and just be this constant montage. I was like, this is just, seems like a bit of a waste.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen plenty of films where, like, not a lot happens. I've seen plenty of slow burns, especially within the horror genre. But once you get to the payoff, the slow burn is worth it. But this just is the same people. It's not even like there's a through story with any of the people that they're watching. It's just these people are working out. These people are watching the telly. These people are having a takeaway. And it's just that on repeat for, you see, the bulk of the first hour, just with the occasional like, oh, look at her over there, she's fit. And it doesn't, when you get to the end of the film and you look back, none of that has given us anything. It's not like there's anything happening in one of those windows that we missed, and then on the second viewing you go, oh well, now I understand that twist. It's just, I don't know, maybe it was a lot of friends and family and a way to shoehorn them all in. I don't know, it just doesn't seem to make sense. It was almost painful to watch in places because I was just screaming for, can something happen? Happen? Are they going to see something that happens and that, or no, they're just going to have a conversation and go, oh, he's a bit weird.
Yeah. it's just... And I think it's a prime example of, like, you can have a good idea and a good concept with, like, the whole, you people watching them and the CCTV footage and the handheld footage. Like, we know that that has worked in previous, particularly like horror films. So it works, but it can be so overused. And when you just do it constantly, it loses the effect. So when you're initially watching it and going, oh, they're being watched, that's kind of uncomfortable. You then, and then they're completely not aware of it. And then all of a sudden, it keeps happening and you're like, okay, I'm a bit bored of this now. Can we move on to something a bit more exciting? Also, the other thing I wanted to mention was that these CCTV cameras were placed in very weird angles.
Yes.
There was one point where it was like on the floor looking up. I was like, where is this CCTV camera placed? It was just really odd angles. I was like, this doesn't even make sense for what it's trying to do. It's like not even placed where a CCTV camera would be.
Yeah, it's just, there's, I mean, there's just so much. It's, and I hate, like I say, I hate to be negative on a film, but this one was just, I tried very hard to find a redeeming feature, and outside of it being some film early film experience for Margot Robbie, I can't really see, because I don't think anybody else has really worked since other than her. So I can't I can't see much merit in it outside of that.
Yeah, it's yeah, that's kind of it, really. I don't really think that it has, because again, you don't want to be too negative. I'm trying to find redeeming qualities, but I was just watching it. I was like, there's honestly, like, no part of this that I was enjoying, other than the fact that I think the basic concept made sense, and had it been a bit more refined and, like I said, maybe in a short film format, I think it would have been much more enjoyable. But because it was so dragged out and sort of handled with so little tact and care, it just sort of fell a bit flat, really.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't feel like there's anything else we need to say.
No, I mean, it's got under 200 logs on Letterboxd, so it's not a film that has been particularly widely seen, but I don't necessarily feel that that's a bad thing.
No. If there's anyone watching this who is even somewhat curious, you can watch it for free on Amazon Prime. You don't have to pay, if you're in the UK at least.
You can fast forward through most of the first hour and not lose anything.
And then you get to see Margot Robbie's early acting days, and that's about it. But I would encourage you to maybe look elsewhere. Go and watch Neighbours instead.
Yes, definitely.
So a few years after this film came out, Margot Robbie sort of got her, what would arguably be her big break into Hollywood, with The Wolf of Wall Street, which is the next film that we're going to be talking about. It has 8.2 stars on IMDb, which is a very high rating on IMDb. It was released in 2013. It's directed by Martin Scorsese. The screenplay was written by Terrence Winter, and it was based on the book by Jordan Belfort. It is based on the true story of Jordan Belfort and his rise and eventual fall working on Wall Street. I would assume you'd seen this film before, but I may be wrong.
Yeah, I'd seen it. I sort of saw it the year that it was up for the awards, and catch as many of the awardsy films as possible. So I saw it then. I've not seen it since until this week, mainly because it's 3 hours and I have a 3-year-old, and that's a lot of time to invest into a film.
Yeah. I watched this a couple of years ago from the request of my boyfriend, who said, you need to watch this. It had been on my list for a long time, but I am always slightly put off by extremely long films because, like you said, it's a lot of time to invest. And so I always put them off for a really long time. And then usually when I eventually do watch them, if they're well loved, I enjoy them too, but it is 3 hours long. Do you like this film? Because I know that this one, despite its popularity, can be a bit polarizing, I've found.
Well, I'm not, as much as I'm a film journalist, I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of Scorsese, but this, I think, is one of his more accessible films. And I'm a sucker for a biopic about an interesting character, and just the life that this man supposedly had is just so far away from my own. It's quite interesting to see, you know, all that excess of money and just think like, oh, what would I do with all that money? So I do enjoy this one.
Yeah, I really enjoy this. I think it's kind of wild from start to finish. It is entertaining to watch how crazy this man's life was. And like you said, living in complete excess with absolutely everything. And yeah, I find it really interesting. It's one of those films that seems to have been like sort of taken into the Film Bro Hall of Fame. And I find it I always find it interesting with those films because I've discussed Fight Club on this podcast before, and that's another one that's like a Film Bro film. And again, both those films, that's like you see these people being like, yeah, that's how I want to live my life. And I watch these films and I think that's not what they're trying to say, though. I don't think this film is trying to tell you should be like this man. I think it's trying to show you the perils of living like this. And I always find it really interesting when I see not all people, because, you know, that's a big generalization, but a lot of people being like, yeah, this man, like, he had such an amazing lifestyle. And I'm just like, where do you get that from this film? Because I watch it and I think, my God, this man was a mess despite all the money.
Yeah. I mean, obviously drugs were what kept him going.
And there is a lot of drug use in this. My God.
Yes.
I did see on my little trivia search that the drugs they used in substitute for cocaine was they used like vitamin B tablets that they then crushed up. And I was like, that just feels like that would hurt even like your nose. Just constantly snorting vitamin B. Surely that's bad for you at some point if you're doing too much of that, beyond cocaine obviously being bad for you as well. You can't have them snorting cocaine on this film set.
No, I think I know that like other films use like ice and sugar and stuff, but I guess vitamin B, at least it's a vitamin. It's giving them some sort of sustenance and nutrients.
Because they had so much of that going on, just like, and again, it's one of those things where you look at it and you go, this is ridiculous. He's got piles and piles of like cocaine in his house. And you're just thinking, there's no way. But then we're not delusioned to the fact that there are these big like bankers and these big Wall Street guys, stockbrokers who do live lifestyles like that. It's just, I think this film does a really good job at showing how crazy rich people can be when they have too much money and not enough things to spend it on, so they just buy in excess.
Yeah, and it's that whole thing about they've got millions and millions, but that's still not enough for them. They need more and more millions. Like, they've already got more wealth amassed than they could ever think to spend in a lifetime, but it's still not enough, so they have to keep going and going. Because I always look at when you see, you know, so and so's net worth is this much and that, I like myself think, like, what would you do with that money? Like, surely, like, you know, billionaires, they could like give off a few million and end, you know, world hunger and things. But I guess once you're in that world, it is about, well, I've got to keep this wealth, I've got to keep my status. And it's just, it's a big jar to me as somebody that's nowhere near any of that sort of wealth. So I find it very hard to get into that mindset, because it just seems very selfish.
Yeah, it's always interesting, because I used to work in a theatre. I used to work front of house at a theatre, and you'd sometimes get like celebrities and stuff coming in. And it was always really interesting because they'd never pay for anything. And I'd be like, these are the people with the money. I remember one time there was a guy, I won't say who it was, but I Googled his net worth after this encounter. And he was worth, I think, something ridiculous, like $8 billion or $8 million, something like that. Ridiculous amount of money. Like, he had so much money. Oh, no, it was $80 million. He was worth $80 million. And when I took these drinks to him, he responded with, "Do I have to pay for these?" And I was like, "Yes." Yeah. "What do you mean?" I was in such shock. I was like, "What do you mean?" And he was like, "Ugh, fine." And I was like, "What do you mean? Do you have to pay for them?" And then I Googled how much he was worth, and I was like, "Mate, these drinks cost like 40 quid. What was the issue?" But like, the rich stay rich by not spending any money. Get everything for free, or as Jordan Belfort does, cheat people out of their money and scam his way to the top.
Yeah, it's a different world. I can't get my head around that mentality at all.
I think that's why this film can be quite entertaining, because it is like, oh, how the other half live. And you see this guy just go from, and like rewatching it, what was quite interesting is seeing like the first like 10 minutes of the film, he's this sort of bright-eyed young guy who's just really excited to be working on the stock market. He's sitting there and going, "Oh yeah, we can help other people get more money." And they're like, we're just like looking at getting ourselves money. And he's like, "Oh, okay." And just the switch up from that kind of going in with somewhat good intentions to where he ends up, it's quite an interesting trajectory in what can feel like quite a chaotic film, because it's very jumpy at points, which I did read was an intentional editing choice from Scorsese. To every single time he takes that Jordan Belfort takes drugs in the film, the editing gets very sporadic, and the continuity's out of place because he doesn't know what's going on. So even though the film can feel a bit like all over the place, that kind of is the idea. And it is so interesting to see this man's like journey from, like I said, somewhat good intentions to just, I want money and I want it now.
Yeah, like one lunch with Matthew McConaughey and he's all in.
That scene I found out was improvised. The chest beating was apparently, it's apparently one of Matthew McConaughey, I can never say his name, my God. it's his, one of his warm-up exercises, and he just started doing it on camera and Leonardo DiCaprio just got involved. But it became kind of iconic. So
yeah, cause I mean, he's not in the film all that much, and that is, when you think of Wolf of Wall Street, it's like that is one of the main scenes that you think of.
Mm. And this has got a pretty stacked cast when you look at it. Obviously, you've got Leonardo DiCaprio at the top, probably the biggest name. Well, you know, is the biggest name in the film. But then you've got all these other side characters that come in that are relatively big names within the industry. And then you have Margot Robbie, who was at the time very much a newcomer to the Hollywood scene. But I don't know about you, but I feel like she holds her own against these like industry heavyweights. She doesn't look uncomfortable in that situation at all.
No, I mean, from the minute that you see her, it's like she's always been in Hollywood. This isn't her first Hollywood film. You know, this is like a 50th Hollywood film. She slips in, and she works beautifully within the aesthetic of the film, because, you know, she is this very attractive young woman, and she's there like head to toe in designer gear, and, you know, she wears the costumes well, and she does, like, just a screenshot of her signifies the glamour and excess almost of the Wolf of Wall Street. I mean, just the fact that this is her, and it's, you know, it's not like it's a small director either. It's a big film. She's against these heavyweight actors, and she's got, you know, one of the most iconic film directors of all time behind the camera. And the fact that at no point can you pick up on any nerves or anything throughout her performance, that's, you know, that's an actress that knows where she wants her career to go, and she has grasped this opportunity a lot like her character Naomi does. You know, she's doing the same thing on set that Naomi is in the film.
Yeah, I find that's something I find really interesting about Margot Robbie as an actor, and obviously now she's moved into producing a lot of her own work. But she sort of, I think she was very aware of, like, because this industry is so caught up in what people look like. I feel like she was very aware that she is a very attractive woman and could very easily slip into that blonde bombshell, much like, you know, Marilyn Monroe did and all of those things, like the bombshell of the era. She could very much slip into that quite easily. She used that as an in, because I mean, it's undoubtable that in this film, a big part of her casting would have been the fact that she is as attractive as she is, because that's the character. She comes into this film and then she builds her way up doing a couple of roles similar to that. And then once she has the backing and people, you know her, she then produces something like I, Tonya, which she then stars in, and shows, no, I've got the acting chops as well. It's not just my face. It's everything else as well. And that's why I find her to be quite an interesting example of somebody seemingly understanding the industry and the ins and outs of the industry so well that they're able to manipulate it to their own you know, success.
Yeah, I mean, she's completely skipped that whole facet that a lot of actresses get stuck in, which is, you know, the wife or girlfriend. I know that she's playing like the wife and the girlfriend here, but she has, Naomi has autonomy and spark to her, you know, to a lot of degree. She controls her relationship with Jordan. She's there because she wants to be there, and as soon as she doesn't want to be there anymore, she is gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's an interesting character, because it would have been so easy to reduce the character down to just, she's the pretty girlfriend and then the pretty wife and you know, their sex scenes and everything like that. But instead, there's layer. There's a layer to her character, many layers to her character. And she comes across as this very strong-willed, isn't afraid to say what she thinks. And she's got some great lines in this as well. Like, as an actor, she's got some great moments, some sort of what have, you know, gone on to be quite memorable moments from the film. And I think Margot does a brilliant job here at, like, holding her own against these big industry people.
Yeah, she definitely knew what she was doing when she signed on to this, and she's very carefully constructed her journey through Hollywood. And it is nice now that she has that recognition that she can go off and make these pieces, because, like you say, she was heavily involved in I, Tonya. And in I, Tonya, she's not the pretty girl, you know. She changes her appearance, you know, her hair's like duller and less shiny and vibrant, and her performance shines through. But equally here, you know, Naomi is such a strong character that you can see that ferocity of Robbie bursting through.
Mm. And I think from literally, like you were saying, from the minute she comes onto the screen, she commands the screen, she commands your attention. She's got an interesting, like, there's it's always like that glint behind the eyes, like she's not just there standing there looking pretty. She's got an idea in her head. She knows she wants to stay at this party, and probably for a reason, you know, to get in with these guys and get more money and whatnot. But she has a lot going for her in this character when you compare it to something like ICU, where again she's playing kind of the pretty character that everyone fancies, who has none of that added on top. That's where you kind of see the contrast between these two films, and like what can happen when you give someone with her acting ability something really good to dig your teeth into a little bit, while still, you know, in line with, I guess, the typecast, the stereotype. We know that Hollywood loves to typecast people. And I think I would really love to have, like, been a fly on the wall when she was having discussions with her agent, going into, like, what I want to know whether she literally sat down and was like, this is my plan, or yeah, whether it just happened to fall into place.
Yeah, and it's brave as well, because it's her first role in Hollywood, and there is a lot of nudity,
mm-hmm,
and that can be a kiss of death for some actresses, you know. Yeah. It's, you know, once they've got naked on screen, studios, audiences lose interest because they've seen it all.
Mm.
I remember when Angelina Jolie was like really on the rise, there was all these men being like, oh yeah, she's well fit, you know, and there was this like desire to see her do a nude scene. She had already done one in her debut film Cyborg 2, but because it was so under the radar, mm, they hadn't seen it. And so I think like Angelina Jolie managed to forge a lot of her early career based on this sort of titillation of like, or maybe it's this one where she's gonna, you mm know, where we're gonna see something. But Robbie, you know, right out from the gates, she is just there, and that could have gone in such a different direction were mm it not for her having the acting ability to be like, I'm naked, but I'm also going to give you this performance, because my being naked is actually part of my character, because my character knows that sex is the way to gain control, and that is what mm I am doing.
Well, it's quite interesting you mentioned that, because again, when I was looking up the information about this film, I've read that Scorsese had actually said to her, oh, you can just wear a bathrobe in this scene where she appears like fully naked. And she said, no, that doesn't make any sense to the character. She knows that her body is a huge part of like what's going to get her what she wants. So she would come out naked. And he's like, oh, okay. And he was like, okay, if that's what you want to do. So it was her idea to do that, which again, I think shows an absolute boldness from someone who's very early on in their career, because that's bound to be an uncomfortable scene to film, because
yeah,
you're literally completely naked in front of all these people. But to have to understand the character enough to go, no, this wouldn't make sense, and we're going to do it like this. I think, again, just shows that she's got the smarts and she understands characters from like an acting's perspective, but also understands the industry.
Yeah, she knew that by doing that, it was going to get the attention. It was going to get studios and filmmakers. Who's that woman? I want her in my film.
Yeah. And when you look at sort of, because her career, sorry, goes on the up almost immediately after Wolf of Wall Street. She starts to appear in much more sort of like high budget Hollywood studio film. She was in Focus with Will Smith in 2015, which again, similar character, sort of pretty girl, but has a lot going on beneath the surface. And then she does Suicide Squad in 2016, which, as much hate as that film got, absolutely, I think we can't deny, put her on the map even more, because it was a big DC film and she was the first person to play Harley Quinn on screen, like live action. So that has become one of her most iconic roles. So it's so interesting because she's still so early on in her career when you actually look at it. I think on IMDb, let me double check that I'm not making this up, she's got 38 credits, including stuff that hasn't quite been released yet. So she's not got a lot.
No.
When you compare it to other actors of her sort of star quality, she's not got a lot on her CV. Yet what she has got past like 2013 is pretty much all big stuff, big studio films. Like she's the lead role, or at least the supporting lead. Like there's a lot going on, and it is really interesting to look at, because this doesn't happen very often where an actor just steps onto the scene and then immediately is like a star. I think it's happened more recently with like people like Florence Pugh, I think, is another example of that, who just stepped onto the scene and everybody wanted to be working with her. But it doesn't happen all that often. And I can't help but think that when it does, it's because either the person, the actor themselves, or the team that they have around them is really like clued up on the industry and how they're going to make it work and where they're going to put people, what roles they're going to put them in that will elevate them to whatever point they want to get to.
Yeah, and I mean, even sort of going back to the Harley Quinn thing, even just the progression in that character, I know that Robbie's had a lot of input into that. So the first one, she was very, the way she was dressed was very provocative and, you know, sort of for the lads. Mm. But then she goes and makes Birds of Prey, which shows a completely different side of Harley Quinn that a lot of female audiences really responded to, because it's this very female empowered story. And then by the time she's in James Gunn's The Suicide Squad, she's in talks with him about where Harley is at now, and then suddenly her clothes, although it's a Suicide Squad movie, her clothes are less provocative and are more elegant, and there's a lot more character work, and you know that has come from her connecting to this role, but also the fact that people in the industry recognize her tenacity and her smarts and are prepared to listen.
And she, you know, she's producing a lot of her own work, which I think is something that a lot of women tend to do at some point in their career, because it allows them to do stuff that is just away from the typecasting. Well, a lot of women feel like they have a sell-by date in terms of the industry. Once they reach a certain age, it's like the industry doesn't care about them anymore, particularly if they're well known for their looks. Again, this is why I find Margot Robbie to be such an interesting actor to talk about, because it's like she knew that from the off, and she was like, this isn't going to happen to me. I'm going to produce stuff that makes people aware that I am a good actor, and I'm going to have an input into my roles that adds layers to that, that isn't just the pretty girl. I just find her really interesting.
No, I'm exactly the same. She's a fascinating actress and producer. Just in the projects that she picks to work on as a producer, she's definitely doing all of the right things. Because I think she's also one of those actresses that bridges the gender divide. You know, Everybody can like her. I know that when I was younger, there was a lot of actresses where they were claimed very much as like for the men, she's not that attractive, or that she, only women like films that she's in. But Robbie is an actress that both male and female audiences will go and see, because they know that whatever she picks is going to be worth a go.
Definitely. And it is interesting seeing these two films, which are kind of early on in her career, because I imagine with The Wolf of Wall Street, that probably was a big part of her being in that film, was luck. I don't know the process of her getting cast in that, whether she I imagine it was just a typical casting process of her just getting an audition and going along, but I don't know whether Scorsese had seen her in something. I don't know.
He's a big Neighbours fan. He's a massive Neighbours fan. Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. I thought you were telling the truth. I was like, really? That wouldn't surprise me. Maybe he's a Neighbours fan. I don't know. It's just interesting. She would have been maybe just completely lucky to have got in that situation and to have been with, like you said, one of the biggest directors in the world. And then it's just completely ran with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's apparent that she has something from, like we said, from the instant that you see her. But it's just, I watched ICU, and then I went and collected my daughter from preschool, and then I had The Wolf of Wall Street on while I was doing dinner. And just the fact that there was suddenly a wide shot of her, like I said, ICU, it's lots of like mid close ups, so you never really see her as a person. She's just this head for a lot of the film. And then suddenly in Wolf of Wall Street, when they go into her apartment before she, you know, goes in and gets undressed, just her walking through the room, I was like, wow, like there is something special about this woman. And look, she is a real person. You know, that's kind of sometimes all it takes to make a film better, is show that these people are actual, they have legs and they are people.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's like in ICU, she's just kind of a floating head for most of it. It's just like, look at this girl's face. And then you get to this one, and you see all of her, well, literally, but it's just, there's so much more going on with her character. And the film's just enjoyable in general. It's as wild as it is, and as you sit and watch these people destroying their lives while thinking they're making them better, it's so entertaining. And there are so many points in it where you're watching and thinking, there's no way. Like when he's flying the helicopter and it nearly crashes, he crashes his car but thinks he's driven it perfectly. There's just so many little moments in this that just show the craziness of this man's life and the impact that he had on so many other people as well.
Yeah, and the scenes between them, like the whole argument where she's like throwing water and stuff on him, that's another humorous scene, and it demonstrates that, you know, she can be sexy, but she can be funny too, because, you know, she keeps throwing, he's like, don't you throw more water on me? And then, you know, she does, and she, I don't know, there's just something about every scene that she's in, because she's not in a huge amount, it's a 3-hour film, she's not in a huge amount of it, but as soon as it does go to that dynamic with Jordan and Naomi, it makes you sort of like perk up and concentrate in a little bit more, because you have to wonder what kind of woman stays with a man like this, because she is aware of his destructive behavior. She's aware that there's other women. You know, you have to go, why is she staying? Why is she having children with him? And then obviously you learn that she also came from nothing and she wants to be something. It's that whole American dream that everybody's fed, and she is doing whatever she can to keep it. And it, you know, it's sad. Her character has this sadness to it in that respect when you dig into her.
No, definitely. It's like she's desperately trying to keep up appearances and keep up with this being rich. Like, and I think it's one of those things that once people are rich, they don't want to lose that either. And you sort of see, it's sad to see that sort of crumble down and sort of her be affected by him, particularly towards the end, because obviously everything really does go up in flames. It's just a really interesting character, and what a lucky opportunity for her to have that be one of her first big films. I just think that's so fortunate.
I was going to say, like, I don't know if it would have been quite the same if, and it was a couple of years later, but if Focus had been the film that she did first, I'm not sure if it would have gone the same.
Yeah, I mean, this was always going to be like a high profile film. It's Scorsese, it's Leonardo DiCaprio. It was always going to be like a big film that everyone watched. So there's that going for it as well. But then just the added bonus of her playing this character that very much plays to her stereotypes and her typecasting, but then adds so much more to it. That's like beyond fortunate and beyond lucky, because for so many actors, that's not the case. And they get, like you say, they get stuck in a box for the majority of their 20s. Because when she filmed this, she was like 21. Which is also mad to me, to have that much confidence and understanding of yourself and your craft is beyond like comprehension. Because I know that when I was 21 and I was leaving drama school and going out into the big wide world, I didn't have the confidence in myself to be doing stuff like that. I didn't have the knowledge and understanding of my own acting ability to know exactly what I wanted to be doing, and having the confidence again to say to directors like, yeah, this is what I think I should do. So for her to be able to have that at that young age is crazy. It's absolutely crazy to me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna put my neighbor's hat on again and just say that program was such a rich training ground for a lot of actors. You know, a lot of people have passed through that. I think all three Hemsworth brothers appeared in some portion of Neighbours, and you've got like Guy Pearce, Russell Crowe had a stint on there. So many lead actors from CW shows started off, like I think half of series one of the 100 cast were literally ex-Neighbours people. And it is such this training ground where they get all this experience, and a lot of them are going in like Robbie did, they're going in young to be one of the high schoolers. And I think they take everything in there, and then they all, whenever somebody leaves Neighbours, it's because they're going to try and break America. And there's many that do break through, but then there's also some that don't manage. And I think that Robbie studied the paths that everybody else that left took, and then decided on hers, and everything came together. I feel like she was very, this is always where she's wanted to be, and she's done whatever she can to get herself there.
Yeah. And I find it, because again, like with Australian soap operas, I feel like there's less of a stigma, because I find the ones over here in the UK, if you're on a soap opera, it's deemed almost as if it's like, that's it. You're not going to work outside of that. Whereas in Australia, it seems to be, that seems to be much less of a stereotype. And these people do these shows, and they're usually there for quite a long time, and then they go off and do something else. And it's not too much of a shock when they do that. I feel like the UK misses out on things. So, because we have, I think this might be because we have a lot of drama schools over here. So we feel like people are getting trained up in drama schools and you produce a lot of very good actors through that. But I do sometimes feel like we're missing out on something over here that really helps young people get into acting and understand acting. I think the Skins did that for a while for people.
Yeah.
We've had some brilliant actors come from that who've gone on to do amazing things. I think Sex Education has the potential to do that for this sort of generation, and because it has a lot of, obviously you've got the lead cast on there, including, you know, Emma Mackey, who's going to be, and Shooty, who's going to be in Barbie with Margot Robbie. You have all the lead cast, but then you've got a lot of like one-offs as well that go in on that for just one episode. I just feel like we need more of that in the industry, where people have a space to really like learn on the job. And soaps are a good place to do that, because you do practically everything, every genre, everything imaginable. The amount of drama that happens on those streets prepares you for anything. So it's a shame that there's a bit more of a stigma over here that if you do something like EastEnders or Corrie, that's it.
Yeah, because I mean, I think if you sort of you look through, there's only maybe what, Saran Jones and Michelle Keegan that have really managed to, I was thinking recently, managed to sort of push through into some other aspect of British. And, you know, people, it seems to be that, you know, if you're in Hollyoaks, you then go into reality TV instead of other jobs. And, you know, they're learning the same stuff as their Australian counterparts. It's just like you say, there is more of a stigma attached to, oh yeah, but it's, you know, it's so-and-so from Emmerdale, it's so-and-so from this. It's like, I guess we're so invested in our soaps over here that we can't separate the character from the person playing the character.
Because it is one of those things that when you're, I remember speaking to my my agent when I first signed with them, and they were asking me like what sort of acting jobs I would do. And they were like, oh, would you be happy to do a soap? Because we know that some people aren't happy to do that, because it's like some people view it as a death sentence. And I was like, babe, a job is a job. A job is a job. But for some people, it's like a big no-no, because they feel like they won't be able to get out of that. And I understand that concern, because, you know, for a lot of people, they don't want to be stuck in that forever.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, I think, you know, well, with the Australian ones, especially when it comes to Breaking America, I don't, Home and Away and Neighbours aren't as well known over there, so I do think it's slightly easier for them to transition. I mean I love Margot Robbie to bits, but she will always be Donna from Neighbours to me. But I can that to me is just, I mean, that's kind of the reason why I was like, okay, I'll give Wolf of Wall Street a go, let's see, you know, let's see how Donna does in in Hollywood. But not everybody in the UK is of the same mind. Again, there is that, oh, they're from Neighbours, and, you know, it's seen in the Home and Away, and it is seen as like a joke. But I think it's much easier for them to go and break America, where it's that they're less known for that.
I think there's a bit of elitism with the old soaps in the UK film and TV industry. It's like, it seems sort of a lower end sort of entertainment, which I've never quite partook in that idea anyway, because if you're being entertained, then who really cares? But I do think that's part of the issue. But it's good that Margot Robbie was able to break from that and not get sucked into this kind of, oh, she's only ever gonna be Donna from Neighbours. Even if that is in your mind. but
it's like it's a beloved thing. It's not like Donna from Neighbours.
Exactly.
But it's like you say, it's mad that people view soaps in that way, because they go through everything. I mean, just the emotional acting that people, if they get a chunky storyline, you know, where, you know, somebody's just died or somebody's, you know, got some sort of sickness, you know, they deal with a lot of really tough subjects, obviously, to raise awareness for the audiences at home. And just to then sort of brush that actor off as, oh yeah, but they were in Coronation Street. It's like, yeah, but did you see their body of work in that soap? They can easily lead this, you know, US drama movie that you've got, because that's going to be a walk in the park for, you know, compared to the 6 months that they spent, you know, battling an eating disorder on this program.
Because that's the thing, these storylines last months. It's not like one and done. It's literally like months and months on end, sometimes years, like literally like a whole year of them trying to figure out who murdered who or whatever. They go on for so long. And so when people do dismiss it, I can't help but feel annoyed for these actors, because they will go to work and they will put their all into their time on screen, and they'll make sure that they've gone in there as prepared as possible. They do all of the things that all other actors do, but because it's just seen as something that's like a lower entertainment, they don't get as much attention for it. They don't get as much, you know, praise for it. And then when they do try and break away, everyone's just like, nah, well, you were just on EastEnders, weren't you? It's just like,
yeah.
Give them something. Like they're really going, because I don't watch a lot of soaps because I'm always at work in the evenings usually, but when I do like catch up on the old Christmas specials when I go home to see my family, and my mum tells me everything that's happened in the last year on EastEnders so that I know what's going on, I sit there and I watch it and I go, and I'm like, wow, these people are like going through it. Like you can't, I don't like it when people dismiss that. I just don't think it's very fair.
No. And like, you know, you say if you take a chance of them, you get people like Margot Robbie.
Mm-hmm. So we've really discussed her career though, which is great. Are there any other like favourite films of hers or projects of hers other than Neighbours, which you clearly love?
I do. And there was some news on the day of recording that's got me very excited. It's coming back. And I really like I, Tonya.
Mm-hmm.
I used to work for E1, who were the distributor in the UK. And that was the film that was a couple of months after I started. That was one of the films that I was working on a lot. So I've seen it. I saw it like 5 or 6 times before it was officially released, because I used to work in the tech team. So we did all of the rehearsal prep for like premieres and press screenings and things. So we had to like make sure that the print worked. So we have to watch it through on the screen it was going to play at. So I've seen I, Tonya so many times. And I just think that it's such a great project to pick. And I didn't keep up on my US figure skating when I was a teenager, so the whole like Tonya Harding story just completely passed me by, and I found it fascinating, and I liked the way that it had fun. It wasn't a serious drama. There was a lot of tongue-in-cheek stuff, and her and Sebastian Stan were so well paired together. I think I, Tonya is a particular highlight, I think.
Yeah, it's the same for me. I really like I, Tonya. I think Margot Robbie does an amazing job in that. I think her acting is incredible in that. I really enjoyed Birds of Prey as well. Just thought that was a really enjoyable film. And I'm really looking forward to seeing Babylon, because I think that looks amazing. I can't wait to see that. And obviously I can't wait to see Barbie either.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued to see what they've done with that iconic character, because we know that Margot Robbie is very savvy to the industry and how, you know, people with, you know, that look a certain way are perceived, and then with Gerwig behind the camera as well, who has made some really interesting like female focused stories. It's because it's not going to be what we all think it's going to be, you know. It's not, I don't think it's going to be this like bubblegum pop sort of throwaway thing. There's going to be something much deeper to it, and I can't wait to sort of find out what that's going to be.
The time has come where I do have to ask you which film of these two you preferred. I think it's clear, but just so we have it.
Well, I mean, it's definitely the Wolf of Wall Street. I mean, if I was on that, you know, was it the Room 101 or whatever, where you can cast stuff into the abyss? I'm pretty sure that ICU would be on my like, put it in the room. Let's save Margot the embarrassment of having that. Yeah, it's Wolf of Wall Street all the way.
Yeah, same for me. Much preferred the Wolf of Wall Street. I am, part of me is like sort of morbidly interested to watch the other lowest rated film that had the same rating and was directed by the same guy, but I don't think I can put myself through that because I also know that it's not free to watch, so I'm not paying for that.
No,
but there is a, yeah, there's a little bit of, you know, curiosity killed the cat moment where I'm like, I wonder if it's as bad.
I mean, you've got to pay for it, so maybe it might be a little bit better, you know, you've got to pay for the quality, but no, it's probably not going to be.
But yeah, I think it's fair to say that The Wolf of Wall Street definitely won this battle. Well, do you want to tell the people where they can find you on the socials?
Yep, so I am on Letterboxd and Twitter, if it's still a thing as we go to air, at Gizmo Shikari. And if Mastodon has taken over, then I'm at Cat Hughes.
So you know where to go. If Twitter's folded, you know what to where to go. Yes, as always, you can follow the podcast on Better Bad Pod. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm Jess_Roland. Thank you for joining me today, Kat. I always like to end this by asking if there's anyone else that you think I should discuss on here. Any other actors or directors?
I think Keanu Reeves, because that guy has got this big reputation for doing like bad films, but then he's also made some amazing things. You've got the Matrix films, the John Wick films are a lot of fun, but also stuff like My Own Private Idaho, which he did for Gus Van Sant, is, you know, this really romantic drama about these two men. He's got this persona of being, you know, Ted from Bill and Ted, and or, you know, doing terrible films like Johnny Mnemonic or whatever. But I think there's a lot of depth to him that people don't necessarily respect. So I think he would be a good subject.
Yeah, I'll definitely be adding him to my list of people to discuss. I think he's got a really cool career. And like you said, there's bound to be a really bad movie at the bottom. And then a really good one at the top. So we've got the variety there. But yes, thank you so much for joining me. I hope you've had fun. I hope you've enjoyed our discussion.
Yes, definitely.
And for the listeners, I'll see you next time on Better Than Bad. Thank you so much. Join me next time on Better Than Bad, where I'll be joined by returning guest Callum to discuss Anya Taylor-Joy's highest and lowest rated films. We'll be talking about The Menu and Here Are the Young Men. And I'll let you in on a little secret. One of those films was my favourite film that I watched last year. So listen next time and find out which one it is. I'll see you then.